to the location of Iranian forces in order to use chemical weapons against them. What more can be said? This was indeed a war, a proxy war, of the United States against Iran already in that time. President Ahmadinejad has said very rightly, very justly, that the United States owes Iran an apology. Much earlier, it was suggested to Carter that the United States owes Iran an apology. Owes Iran an apology, among other things, for the coup d'etat in 1953, which brought the Shah back to power. His shopping expedition in Rome was brought to an end, and he was brought back on the throne with the help of Britain, the United States, and Israel. Carter dismissed this, oh, this is ancient history. This is ancient history. For him, it was ancient history. You know, Carter, these days, he tries to project the image of a noble humanitarian, even a courageous person, because very hesitantly, he says a few things that approximate to the truth about the Palestine question. For my part, this does not get him off the hook with respect to what he did in Iran. Not only did he fail, as it were, to acknowledge the coup d'etat that had taken place, if you look at his conduct throughout the revolution, or the conduct of the United States, he gave unstinting support to the Shah's regime. At a time when Iranian oil workers had gone on strike and deprived the Iranian military of oil to continue operating, Carter ordered that special deliveries of oil be made precisely earmarked for the Iranian military. And when it appeared that, to quote the New York Times, that the unthinkable is about to become the inevitable, that is the unthinkable that the people of Iran should liberate themselves moreover under the banner of Islam, that's going to become inevitable. At that time, what did Carter do? He sent to Iran General Hoysen to investigate the possibility of a military coup d'etat. And he reported back to him, sorry, too late, it won't work. In any event, forget about Carter. What the United States is up to now is going to be one of the topics on which Imam Musa, inshallah, will be speaking, so I don't want to encroach on it too much. There are, however, a few things I would like to say. There's a great deal to say. I'm sure I will leave him with some things to say on this topic. Mr. Obama. Mr. Obama, who is, rightly described as the first African-American president of the United States, I would suggest a slightly alternative and more informative designation, that he's the first Afro-Zionist president of the United States. The evidence for this is copious and is abundant. And let me concentrate instead on what he has been saying about Iran. Remember, he likes this notion of carrot and stick. Yeah, anybody? Stop for a while. What does he think he is doing? He speaks of threatening Iran with a stick, but if they behave themselves, a carrot will be offered to them to chew on. Yeah, if he really thinks that the Islamic nation of Iran, 30 years after the triumphant revolution, 30 years after steadfastness in the face of various attempts at subversion, regime change, as they put it, if he really thinks that Iran is like a donkey, well, I'm sorry, but that attribute applies to him. And then, of course, he also speaks of vigorous diplomacy. Let me look at the quote from your sentence, I believe I can find it, from the White House website, the agenda, foreign policy. Okay, what's happening? Now, what kind of change can we look forward to here? Diplomacy, Iran. Barack Obama supports tough and direct diplomacy. Tough, okay? Tough and direct diplomacy with Iran without preconditions. Now is the time to use the power of American diplomacy to pressure Iran to stop their illicit nuclear program, support for terrorism, and threats towards Israel. Oh no. We could analyze each of these items in turn. Their idiocy, their illegitimacy, their mendaciousness, their dishonesty. Illicit nuclear program. What's illicit about it? America, let's face it, has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. the only country that's ever dropped an atomic bomb. I really can't see anyhow the United States, for this and for many, many other reasons, has the right to call the Iranian nuclear program as illicit support for terrorism. Well, what is terrorism? Terrorism, in this particular context, simply means support for those who resist the imposition of American and Israeli dictate on their countries and on their futures. If we say American and Israeli, of course the word "and" may be superfluous, in the sense that these two tend, in the context of Middle Eastern policy, to be virtually synonymous or identical. But grammatically speaking, they're in apposition, American and Israeli. So, tough and direct diplomacy. So what has he said on other occasions? He has said, for example, let me see if I can find it. Oh, remember the business about the hand and the fist. If Iran unclenches its fist, he had the impudence to first use this metaphor in, I think, in his inauguration speech without specific reference to Iran. Then he repeated it in an interview with Al Arabiya. Al Arabiya is a satellite TV station, which, of course, is funded by none other than the Saudi monarchy, so you can get an idea of what its tendencies may be. Yeah, I don't know if any of you watched it. It was a pretty nauseating performance. The interviewer, I don't know if he's Lebanese or not, but anyhow, the interviewer, he was so captivated by Obama that he had difficulty sitting in his seat. It was as if he had difficulty in restraining himself from getting on the floor and kneeling down. Anyhow, Obama then, he repeated this nonsense about the outstretched hand and the clenched fist. What I would like to know is whose fist is clenched. It seems to me that it is precisely the United States / Israel / the European Union that has stretched out to Iran a clenched fist. Iran is now surrounded on each side by a country under a United States military occupation. And sometimes it is said, by newspaper commentators that, well, actually, they want to be, really profound and critical in their analysis. Well, this has really, benefited Iran. Why? Because we got rid of the Ba'athist regime, we got rid of the Taliban. Therefore, it's really to the benefit of Iran. Well, no. I found out today, don't ask me from where, but I don't depend on the New York Times for my information, that in eastern Afghanistan, that is to say, western Afghanistan, close to the eastern border of Iran, already are installed a large number of private security operators from Blackwater and also Israeli operatives. And what are they doing there? This is the question. So close to the Iranian frontier. Add to that the open secret that the United States is attempting to subvert and to sabotage the Iranian nuclear program. It is said that the Israelis wanted special equipment from the United States to go ahead and bomb wherever they wanted in Iran, or to use Hillary Clinton's delightful term, Aleha, to obliterate Iran. Okay, she talked blithely, obliterate Iran. Well, at least she didn't laugh or sing like this Nimrod McCain. But anyhow, they wanted some equipment effectively to fulfill the Clintonian doctrine of obliterating Iran. They were turned down, a rare display of dissent from Israeli goals. But it was said, well, don't worry, we're going to take care of this problem in a different way. Remember also, now that we're talking about the Clintons, that in the time of President Clinton, it was officially passed in the US Senate what was called the Iran Freedom Act. Now, when the United States starts talking about freedom in other countries, watch out. What they really want to do is, of course, to create a political change that will be to the benefit of the United States and in the Middle East, Israeli goals. So this business about the clenched fist. The clenched fist is that in the United States. Add to this also constant threats, sanctions, attempts at subversion. What is truly needed here is, of course, a real change. As President Ahmadinejad has very rightly said, a slight adjustment of language is not enough. What is needed is a real, sincere change. And I'm not holding my breath for it to come about. I'm probably almost out of time, yeah? But you will permit me, I've held a small indulgence. Okay, 5 minutes. In a patriotic nod to my homeland, I would like to talk a little about Britain as well. At the conclusion of the Israeli genocidal assault on Gaza, the current British Prime Minister Brown, going along with his whole nonsense about Gaza being somehow a well-equipped Iranian fortress sandwiched between Israel and Egypt. In fact, the Jerusalem Post said that, you know, we cannot permit Gaza to become an Iranian enclave. An Iranian enclave, who made it? I don't know how many Iranians are actually living in Gaza. But you know, this is it. These people are liars, well, they're not. I mean, they are liars. They are shameless. They are totally shameless. Anyhow, back to Britain. Old Gordon Brown said, yes, we have to stop arms smuggling. You know, I agree. I think what I would like to see is a fully fledged military airport open in Gaza with hangars and warehouses for the receipt of the most up-to-date weaponry. That would be very nice. Then there'll be no need for smuggling. But of course, that's not going to happen. So, he said, well, the Royal Navy will control the waters of the Red Sea and elsewhere to make sure that, you know, the smuggling of weapons stops. You know, never mind that the Israelis get God knows what from this country, including, by the way, not only phosphorus bombs, but a new experimental weapon that induces cancer in very short order. This has been confirmed, by the way. So very nobly, the Royal Navy now is meant to, you know, patrol and stop the smuggling of weapons. It seems to me that the Somali pirates are engaged in far more decent, honorable, respectable activities than the Royal Navy. Let us not overlook the fact that Somali so-called pirates, you know, held to ransom some massive Saudi super tanker, and they got some money, good for them. But the British Navy, what else has it been up to? The British Navy, you may recall, at one point, from its base in Basra, entered Iranian territorial waters and were appropriately held, kindly treated, and sent back to Britain. I was very gratified to see recently that while the assault on Gaza was going on, a group of students broke into the British Embassy in Tehran, pulled down the British flag and hoisted the Palestinian flag. But my real dream is the following. Not that the British ships should enter Iranian territorial waters, but rather one day what I would really like to see is Iranian warships sailing up the Thames estuary and anchoring in front of the Houses of Parliament. Now that will be a day. I will never see it, but here it's a fantasy that I like to entertain.